welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Powell. Before we get into today's discussion, I highly implore you to check out episode number 4, The Next Generation of Log Bullet, with Lieutenant Colonel Jesse Pena, if you haven't already. We're going to be building off that discussion today as we analyze all the tactical training that this generation of logistical lieutenants are receiving at Log Bullet. With me today to help us guide us through this conversation, I have first Captain Michael Ranger. He serves as the course manager for the tactics portion of Logistics Bullet. He's a former infantry officer who V-tipped to logistics in 2019. He graduated from the University of Missouri at Kansas City with a degree in chemistry and commissioned in 2015. Also with me, I have Captain Mike Pataka. He serves as the bold maneuver officer. He's an armor officer who graduated from University of Akron, Ohio with a degree in emergency management and homeland security and commissioned in 2016. I'm so happy to have you both on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So awesome. So first of all, it's good. I mean, we're getting some maneuver side of the house experience coming in, which is, I think, is awesome that you're both being able to oversee and instruct the tactics part of it, because you, I mean, you guys both have lived and breathed it already. So it's good to have that experience in instructing these lieutenants. So as we begin, so what is this flow of Log Bullet now, especially the tactics side of it?
So following all of their academic requirements in the schoolhouse, they come out to the tactics portion of Logistics Bullock training, which we live on the range complex here at Fort Gregg Adams, where we focus on troop leading procedures, engagement area development, tactical convoys, and really applying the doctrinal foundations that they've learned in the classroom to tactical scenarios in the field.
Yeah, we kind of tie in all the schoolhouse's doctrinal instruction. How do you actually run a convoy? What does the convoy brief sound like? And so we'll go over that with the lieutenants.
So how long is it? Like, you're part of it, especially when it comes to tactics.
So our portion is about 3 weeks long.
Okay.
We begin with teaching them PMI. We'll do BRM with them. And then from there, we'll go into land nav and then our FDX.
So as part of the tactics course, we have two of the three graduation requirements for logistics lieutenants, which are the ACFT, basic rifle marksmanship, and land navigation.
Okay.
So as part of the common core task list for the Center for Initial Military Training, we execute, like Captain Pataka said, their basic rifle marksmanship on the M4 and land navigation training. So they're qualified on those two events when they arrive for their units.
Okay. And I'm guessing or AFT now, is that still given at the beginning of the course, or is that later on in the course they have to take that?
It's earlier in the course, and that's done while they're in the schoolhouse with their assigned tacks and with their company leadership.
Okay. Now, if they were, say a student, you know, does not pass the AFT, does that stop them from advancing, or how does that look now?
There's an administrative process. They have to pass the ACFT in order to graduate, and those timelines are set by their tacks to make sure that they're successful before they graduate.
Okay. And then, so you said the other parts was land navigation. Where does that fall?
So that's typically on their first week with us at tactics. We have 3 weeks with the students. So that'll occur at the end of the first week. PMI will occur during the first week. And then the rifle marksmanship qualification, that'll happen the first couple of days of the second week that they're with us.
Okay. And you said that since you guys kind of live out there, is that them operating solely out of the field the whole week, or are they coming back and forth?
So for the first 2 weeks that they're with us, they are back and forth because we do utilize other training locations such as the EST facility here on Main Post. But they are back and forth between Main Post and the range complex for the first 2 weeks. During the third week, they execute their culminating event, which is a 5-day FTX. And so they come out Monday morning, and then they will leave the field and return back to their living quarters on that Friday.
So, and with that, and when they finish that, are they done? Is that like complete bullock for them?
So they have about another week and a half where they execute some final training, specific training on things like the SSA, They visit the Petroleum and Water Department, and they visit the maintenance facility here, Fort Gregg Adams, to see what it's like to be those three types of platoon leaders in an FSC or a BSB.
So it kind of talked to us. So your team really just focuses on solely the tactics side of the house out there. Can you guys walk us through some more of that, especially specifically the land nav part of it? I know, it's hard to think about for me. It's been almost 9 years now, it'll be 9 years now. So I know we had one part of it used daggers for part. Is that something that's still utilized?
Our land navigation training is completely analog. They get a map and a protractor. We do about a 2-hour refresher with them that's NCO-led, where they learn how to plot a point or refresh on how to plot a point, intersection, resection, how to plot their points and where their route planning for their land navigation test. And then they execute the land navigation, which is 8 points in 5 hours, 3 hours of night, or excuse me, 2 hours a night, 3 hours a day. And they have to complete 6 of 8 points in order to be successful.
That's awesome. And then for the range, anything else you guys can highlight for us on any of the different range stuff they're doing out there? Is it just straight qualification or are they doing anything else?
So we go through all 6 tables. So they will do table 1 PMI, they'll do EST, go through barrier training, and then they'll do the 3 phases on the range, whether they from group and zero into their qualification.
Okay.
One of the things that we focus on with the BRM is showing them what tables 1 through 6 look like, according to our training circulars. So that way, when they go to the unit, they can, if they need to adjust based off the commander's guidance, they know at least where their starting point is prior to going out there.
And as part of the range execution, we put students in leadership positions according to the range. So OIC, RSO, safeties, things like that, that they participate in. They develop CONOPS for our range so that they have a base starting point when they get to their units.
That's very good. Because, we're expecting these lieutenants to go out there and be able to run ranges right off the bat. That's pretty much your rite of passage as lieutenants. Can you run a range? That's good that they're getting some of that good understanding before they even get to their unit. So I think that's a great thing you guys are doing there. Kind of tying into kind of going to some other things that you guys are working on is like how TLPs and the warfighting sustainer, how does that fully integrate?
So one of the biggest things that we've done is integrate deliberate cadre-led troop leading procedures for a company FSC level mission. So when the students arrive to us, they're broken into 3 platoons in which they're given leadership positions such as platoon leader, platoon sergeant, squad leaders, team leaders, et cetera. We focus a few days on academic instruction in which we cover terrain and enemy analysis, which leads into engagement area development. And so in their FTX, they're establishing a combat trains command post and establishing an area defense in which they have to not only defend their assigned area, but also operate tactical convoys and tactical resupply from that location. And so as part of that, also, we have an NCO-led tactical training day in which they learn how to establish a LPOP, a listening post or observation post, conduct an LDA crossing, linear danger crossing into a movement to contact and refresh some of those battle drills. They go over how to properly draw a range card into a sector sketch and also build battle positions.
Now you said they're dividing these platoons and they're assigning these leadership roles. Do they rotate through these leadership roles?
Yeah, so we aim to rotate them at least once or twice throughout their entire FTX. That way it gives new other students leadership opportunities. And as we tell them, this is your time to really kind of try out your leadership style with some cadre-led feedback.
And then how does when it talks about decentralized tactical sustainment execution, what does that look like?
So one of the big things that we were asked to come up with in the tactics department by ASU leadership was some key things that a platoon leader must be able to do to be successful, regardless of the type of sustainment formation that they go to. And so as we are all aware, 75% of that logistics capability or sustainment capability for the United States Army lives in the reserve component. Yeah. And so we have to make sure that we integrate all 3 components, 1, 2, and 3, to make sure that they have the same type of knowledge and can integrate and work together. So we developed a platoon leader top 10 for sustainment platoon leaders that focuses on training and preparing, and then mission execution, and really honing in on how to analyze a mission and conduct sustainment from a decentralized perspective, especially as the United States Army, the greater joint force, and the sustainment community prepares for large-scale combat operations.
So could you tell us more about like what this top 10 items are for a platoon leader?
Sure. So like I said, they're broken into two blocks: train and prepare, dominate and win. So for training and preparing, things like conducting TLPs and rehearsing at the unit level. One of the things that the lieutenants have to do as part of their time with us in tactics is analyze a company and platoon level order in which they not only publish their operations order, but they also conduct a rehearsal of concept drill down to the team leader level as they prepare for their mission execution for the FTX. Things like preventative maintenance checks and services, understanding operational level terms and graphics to be able to integrate their plan into the maneuver plan as they execute sustainment, both in training and in a combat scenario. Establishing communication systems and operating together as a unit, and then mastering those weapons fundamentals. For dominating and winning across the force, this is really where we want the tactical sustainment platoon leader to enable maneuver forces. You know, one of our greatest strengths as the joint force for the United States of America is our ability to sustain ourselves and continue moving the fight. So things like being able to conduct your assigned logistics mission, regardless of what type of format you go to, being able to establish security, battle positions and engagement area development, employing fires, and also our new, in the last year, our small unmanned aerial system that we have at Tactics as part of CASCOM's first SUAS program.
Okay. I know we're going to get into that a little bit later, kind of really focusing on what that looks like, because that's going to be, it's a whole unique program into itself.
And I think, you know, one of the biggest things that we've integrated is the terrain and enemy analysis class to give those sustainment platoon leaders a foundational knowledge of how to analyze the area in which they're going to operate, analyze the threat picture, and then be able to secure their assigned area and defend against threats that may be operating in there. And Captain Pataka can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so one of the first things that we identified when we started teaching engagement area development is really step one of EA Dev is identify enemy avenue approach. And we really can't understand where the enemy is going to come from if we don't understand how the terrain is working for us, against us, or really in a neutral manner. So by going through and teaching the lieutenants how to really analyze the terrain where it's severely restricted terrain, they're now able to see where enemy avenue approaches are. And from there, they can start beginning to set up their engagement areas to defend their sector.
Awesome. Yeah, I think was such a lost art, it seems like sometimes, is understanding terrain, especially when it comes to our logistics role, and especially in large combat operations, is understanding how that terrain is going to provide you cover and concealment, especially because we don't want to be all clustered in. We can't be all clustered in anymore as one giant BSA, because you're just asking to be destroyed at that point. So we have to be able to have these platooners go out and be able to just to displace, set up their areas, and be able to run distribution operations in small areas. So it's good that you guys are going through and instructing these lieutenants on how to analyze that terrain. Now they can use it for their advantage and provide disadvantages to the enemy. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's not just for a BSA or CTCP or FTCP. Really for any kind of convoy operations as well, right? Where are some near side ambush sites that the enemy can use against us? Where are those intersections that we have to take a little bit more caution at compared to others? So it really ties into everything that they're doing out inside a field environment.
That's awesome. Especially when you're doing preparing your convoys, going over your route analysis. That's very critical.
We really try to take the science that they've learned from their first 11 weeks in logistics bullock, and then turn that into the art and start introducing them into mission command and how do they apply these concepts in an ambiguous environment. With that, we do have an enduring opposition force that does the exact same thing on the Red Force side during their FTX. And so this is a free thinking enemy, and they receive a mission just like the students do, where, you know, we're not telling the Op 4 where to attack the students. They have their kind of rules of engagement, just like the students do. But they're very much a free thinking enemy. We try to get as close to replicate it, a CTC rotation for the few days that we have them in the field as possible.
That's awesome. You guys are able to conduct, you know, training like that, have an enemy that's more free thinking. So it's not so scripted. And it's just so, especially for you as being the instructors, same thing every day. It's good that it's not just Groundhog Day every day for you guys, but have an enemy that's free thinking. That's much better training for lieutenants, that they have to be more quickly be able to adapt on their feet.
That's right. Yeah. And the results that we've gotten during that FTX with mission planning through leadership changes, all collectively having gone through the same training to analyze that terrain, operate in that terrain. They see it during land nav. They see it during their field tactical training day. And so they're really able to hone in on that and work more collectively towards a common mission. And that's really the goal that we're trying to get after.
And one of the things you touched on, I want to kind of go more into is like understanding that commander's intent to the training that you guys are doing, like the priorities by phase of operations to really how does that, you know, conduct sustainment based on the commander's decision. So if you guys could elaborate more on that.
So we really want to hone in on the tactical sustainment platoon leader being able to understand the commander's intent and operate independently. As we are aware, you know, not all formations are created equal. We don't have the same equipment as some maneuver units do to communicate and control our forces over long period or over long spans of distance. So we, the captains and instructors act kind of as that commander element to give that guidance and intent and let them plan their mission kind of how they see that. We don't give them all the answers, and it is very ambiguous because we want them to find the friction points and try to work through those. And if they don't, that's okay, because that's an opportunity for us to all learn together in what they could have done different or how they could have planned that. If we only told them exactly what needed to happen, they're not going to get to work through those friction points with both the commander and their subordinate leadership. And I'm sure you can add on a little of that.
Yeah, so one of the things is, you know, reading between the lines when we talk about the commander's intent. It's not just a, you know, a paragraph inside an op order. It's really understanding the why we're doing the mission. Why are we going to attack this key piece of terrain? And so that way now the lieutenants can sit there and understand, well, what kind of logistical needs are we going to need? What kind of sustainment is the flock going to require at what time? And so really having them understand that commander's intent is going to help them drive their logistics mindset.
So before we kind of move on and talk about what I'm excited about is when we talk about the UAS stuff, anything else you guys want to highlight when it comes to the tactics portion of Log Bullock?
I think the big thing I'd like to highlight for new students that may be coming to the logistics basic officer leader course is, you know, the supporting role and the sustainment role of the United States Army is to support those maneuver forces in an enabling capacity to allow them to win. And we have to have a tactically focused warfighting mindset as sustainers. We can't sit back in the BSA or sit back in our support area and kind of wait to be told what to do or wait for an ask on sustainment. We have to constantly be thinking about what the maneuver plan is doing to enable those war fighters to continue pushing forward to seize the objective and win.
Yeah, and really forcing the lieutenants to critically think. As Camp Ranger mentioned, we don't hand out any answers. Probably the top 10 question we always get is, how would you do this? And we tell them, we don't want you to execute our plan. We want you to execute your plan. And we challenge all their assumptions. We push the students to see the second and third order effects of their decisions and really kind of critically think about what's next in the fight. What's the next log pack? When's the next resupply? So we really challenge them to critically think out there.
Sometimes that can become frustrating. Yes. You know, we have quite a bit of experience both in our officer and NCO cadre. And so sometimes the students will ask, you know, a question of myself, and then they'll ask Captain Pataka, and they might get two separate answers or two different perspectives that are both foundationally based in doctrine, but how we do things might be a little different based on how we approach the problem. And that's really kind of the first time they experience that here in Bullock, in getting different perspectives to be able to kind of put in their kit bag and how they might approach a problem later.
And I think that's awesome that you guys both have in maneuver backgrounds can really challenge, like I said before, can really challenge the students because they're coming up with these plans like, well, is that really going to work? Like, just from your experience, you can really challenge the students and their understanding, especially how can they better support the maneuver element. So that's awesome. You guys are there on ground. So now I want to get into something that I've been looking forward just to hearing a lot more about is the integration of the SUAS program into Bullock. Just want to interested to see how that's operating out and just see how that program is.
So I'll set the stage and let Captain Pataka talk about it. Last year, at the beginning of 2024, the Commanding General of CASCOM directed that SUAS training be integrated into Logistics Bullock. And so Captain Pataka had really spearheaded that from the ground, not only in the acquisition of the SUAS platform itself, but also in all the administrative requirement it takes to be able to fly a drone on a military installation. The results with the students have been extremely valuable in how they approach their mission with the integrated SUAS platform from both an offensive and a defensive perspective. And Captain Pataka can talk about that.
So I guess before I get in there, it's just for our audience to understand, specifically what is the SUAS, just so everyone has a good understanding of what it actually stands for.
So the SUAS is Small Unmanned Aerial Systems. There's different classes and sizes of those that we won't get into here. But we have a small drone, if you will, small SUAS platform that has camera, infrared night vision capability to see both in the day and at night. It's small. It can get into small locations, but provides an absolutely huge capability for the sustainment warfighter.
Yeah, so upon coming on to Logistics Bullock, that's one of my first tasks is how do I set up a SUAS program? Fortunately enough, as a lieutenant, I was a UAS platoon leader inside the military intelligence company. So I really reached out to some warrant officers to kind of help me through this process. But really is linking in with the Department of Army representatives at the FAA and them kind of walking us through how do we set up our program? What are some of the things that we need to focus on? And so by doing that, we found that we need to send our NCOs out to Master UAS course down at Fort Benning, Georgia. And it's a really great opportunity for our NCOs as well, where we have 88 Novembers, 88 Mikes, 91 Series. And for them to get the Master UAS certification is huge in their career progression as well. So upon them returning back from Fort Benning, we're really able to integrate the UAS into our training and our glide path. So what we do now is we have essentially what we call a blue and a red team. Obviously, blue is going to support friendly forces and the red is going to support Op 4. And so we'll have the students fill out a request and talk to the UAS operator on what it is they want to see, what is it they're trying to achieve, and vice versa with the enemy. As Captain Ranger mentioned, we have a free-thinking enemy, so they will also utilize the UAS in support of their operations as well. And so it does a few things. One, it now... it forces lieutenants, well, whose UAS is up in the sky? So now we have to focus on the communication and making sure we have the same common operating picture. And it also allows them to do reaction to contact, right? So unfortunately, I can't replicate aerial contact. FM390 talks about it being an armed platform. So we really just use that as a visual contact. But now the lieutenants have to worry about what do they look like from the sky? What do they look like from the bird's eye view? And so that's really how we've incorporated our SUAS into our FTX.
It also gets back to some of the foundational tasks that all elements have to conduct. So those basic soldier skills that lieutenants and their platoon sergeants will be verifying inside of their formation. So are we camouflaged appropriately? Do we have good cover and concealment? How can I see myself? How can I utilize this platform to not only find the enemy, or find threat points, but also how do I see myself and what I look like as I'm trying to defend my area? What do I look like from that enemy's perspective? The other thing that it does is it allows students to see some of those second and third order effects of their decisions that they've made, especially if they can visualize themselves from a higher level. So if I choose not to camouflage my location and the enemy can see it, now I need to fix some things inside of my organization in order to be successful and defeat the enemy. The other thing that it does is it shows the lieutenants the integration from the sustainment warfighting function into some of the others. So we talk a lot about that maneuver integration, how are we supporting maneuver, but also using it as a platform as an observer where they can, if they have a pre-planned target as part of their FTX planning or their operational planning, they can use that as an observer for enemy forces, for their indirect fires that they may ask for. They can also use it to develop intelligence and report that intelligence back to the CP or to their higher headquarters and integrating with those other warfighting functions.
Awesome. And I think that's so cool. The students can see themselves in real time and see how they're set up, because that really gets after being able to say, are you concealed? Do you have cover? How can the enemy see you? I think that's a great opportunity for the students to be able to actually see that in real time and try to say, okay, if this is what I'm looking like, then the enemy can see us. Because that's the biggest thing in today's world is you can't just hide anymore. With the way drones have completely changed warfare, and especially has affected us as sustainers and how we're conducting our operations. That's why we can't have a giant footprint, because you're going to see that much more easily than if you're more dispersed in smaller areas.
That's right. Yep. And being able to, like Captain Doc said, just add in another piece of something to analyze and critically think about as they look to protect their forces in order to sustain maneuver elements to win our assigned tasks or mission, war, whatever it is that our nation asks us to do.
So from your experience, being instructing tactics here, I'm a brand new lieutenant coming to the course, or what should I expect? Like, what can a good wisdom you guys get to help a brand new lieutenant prepare for this course?
Expect to come in and focus on the things of what will be expected of you from your commander as a tactical platoon leader. We recognize that not every lieutenant that comes through logistics bullock is going to go to a FSC as a platoon leader, may not go to a BSB as a platoon leader, might be in echelons above brigade. There's 40 different types of logistics formations that a logistics lieutenant can go to. And all of those have different resourcing, different metal tasks, and different requirements based on the element that they're supporting. But when you come, you're going to be integrated as an FSC. You're going to train as an FSC, and you'll be focused on supporting maneuver, because at the end of the day, we're here to fight and win our nation's wars, whether that is in a direct fire maneuver capacity, or we are supporting those maneuver soldiers to defeat the enemy.
Anything from your perspective?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'd give a recommendation to lieutenants come to us is, don't be afraid to open up doctrine. APD Army Pub's website has all the resources for us. We've recently also got hard copy publications now for the students as we hand them out to them as day one. But don't be afraid to open it up and kind of read what it is you're supposed to do in the field, what it is you're supposed to do when you meet the enemy on the battlefield.
Yeah, I'd say that for anybody out there, just continue to open doctrine, especially before you go to a schoolhouse. Understand what are you actually learning at that school, and kind of get a good understanding of that doctrine before you even hit ground. Will set you up for success. Kind of to close this out today, what advice do you each have for the sustainment community at large? I'll start with you, Captain Ranger.
You have to be prepared to look at the mission as a whole. Just because we own a small piece of it, whether we're a lieutenant, a company commander, we have to look at the broader picture to figure out opportunities where we may be asked or required to support that we didn't plan for. And you have to be a flexible leader. You have to be a mission-focused leader. If you're unsure of something, you have to ask. Because the closer that you can get to understanding your higher-level commander's intent, the more freedom of movement and maneuver you're going to have to be able to resupply the forces that are going to defeat our nation's enemies.
Captain Pataka?
So I'd say never forget the why. Obviously, sustainment enables a fight. When logistics is done right, no one notices. But as soon as it fails, everyone is going to notice. And that's when it starts causing friction points. And it's kind of a downhill effect from there onto the rest of the formations.
Awesome. Well, first of all, thank you both for coming in today. It's been an awesome conversation. Kind of walking us through some of the changes and new developments occurring with tactics at Logistics Bullock. I mean, it's completely different now than when I went through it years gone by now. But it's good to see how the school is adapting to the training to meet the new challenges on the horizon and preparing these lieutenants to truly be lethal on the battlefield. Any lieutenant out there that has just completed BULLOC, be sure to drop us a line at Army Sustainment so we can hear your firsthand experience on what BULLOC looks like now, especially when it comes to the tactics. I would also suggest even writing an article to tell your story and experience to the community. Reach out to me and I'll help you out through the writing process. But once again, thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So, well, that is all we have today, folks. I hope you have enjoyed our conversations. Be sure to check out the next edition of the Army Sustained Professional Bulletin, publishing online within the next few weeks. If you'd like to publish an article, we are still accepting submissions for the fall issue until the 15th of July, 2025. Sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.